We welcome you to the Romantic Truth Podcast, where you think before you love. Please feel free to subscribe and listen on Anchor, Audible, Amazon Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Castbox, Podcast Addict, Breakers, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Deezer, or your browser. Be sure to share a link with a colleague, family member, or friend.
Please be advised that the content of this podcast is for mature audiences due to the sensitive nature of subject matter.
Think before you love is the Romantic Truth Podcast motto. You will not get slapped here, we promise.
Hi everyone, Johnson with you here, Romantic Truth, Las Vegas. Yeah, baby, we're here. Now we're going to talk about a subject that comes up a lot that many of you have written in about: proving your love to your partner. When you're at this stage in a relationship, your relationship is definitely in trouble. If you've been with this person for a while and they're coming back and telling you to prove your love, the first thing you need to ask yourself, what have I done that requires me to go on this remedial task of proving myself, proving my love to this person? Now, some of you actually have been put perpetually on this hamster wheel of guilt. So that's what it comes down to. This can be used as a manipulative tool in order to get you to comport yourself or conform to a certain standard this person may have set out for you that you may not agree with. In other words, they may use this as a power move to make you feel less than in the relationship. Therefore, you're always trying to make good in it. It's a point of leverage that they may use. So you have to watch this in particular. If you've done nothing wrong, and this person saying this, they may be doing this to get more attention from you, to get more compliance from you, or to get their way on something that you guys have may have disagreed on in the past. Now, if you've cheated on the person or had some other impasse in the relationship where you did a wrong, well, the one thing to keep in mind, they may not let this go. So they will bring this up time and time and time again. Now, one thing you have to understand about a situation where you might have been caught by your partner cheating, you might have gone to counseling, and now you're on this remedial track in order to get back into the relationship. Keep in mind certain things. That person will ask for creative license to bring this particular thing up over time until it fades. You may see this situation come up again in an argument or dispute when that person starts to reach for things that will hurt you. You may be talking about something where you may want a new car in the family. And he may say, well, you know, we can't afford it. Well, you could afford to be out with that woman that you cheated on me with. And this could be years later. And it's unfair, but people will bring it up, even though it has been resolved verbally. It may not have been resolved emotionally. Now, a lot of times with younger people, older people will have that person to quote unquote prove their love. And this is to reaffirm a person's commitment, because what has happened, they're insecure. And this is their way of feeling more secure. Yeah, well, this person will still do these things for me, so therefore they still love me. Doesn't mean that it's true. It means that for them, it's reassurance. You will also find this when younger women are manipulated by men. When they will say something like, well, you have to prove your love to me. Well, to some people, that means if you haven't had sex with me, you need to have sex with me to prove that you love me. A lot of young women fall for this ruse, and they wind up usually being a single mom based on it, because the person treats them like they're foolish. Women do this also, especially older women dealing with younger men, where they have that issue with the mom? Well, if you really love me, you'll prove your love by leaving home and coming with me and living with me. And he has the way. Okay, my manhood being with this woman versus my still being a child with mom at 18, 19 years of age. So he may be with a 30-year-old woman that has two children, and she feels as though the only thing she has to do is to challenge his manhood enough by making him prove himself. And therefore, by default, she'll get the decision of getting the young man in her life under her control. What a lot of people don't understand is that when it comes down to young men, especially you young fellows, and you're caught between that dilemma of listening to your mom or listening to the other woman, you really have to weigh the odds and the benefit. What are some of the things you would look for? Who sacrificed for me the most? Now, when I say this, I don't mean the basic sacrifices that a parent naturally has to take on with the child. I'm talking about, did your mom ever put you in a precarious situation where you ran the risk of getting hurt, getting killed? You're the man of the house. Mom wanted you to go fight her boyfriend, that kind of stuff. Well, if the other woman doesn't have that drama going on, some men will make that decision. No, I'm going to be with the woman. Damn, mom. Mom exposed me to too much crazy shit. And it's based on that premise. But here's the thing. It's insulting when someone tells you to prove your love to them. That means you have done an incomplete job from their perspective. Or at least that's what they're conveying to you. And they want to see better performance from you in that endeavor to show that you care. Some of you young men are also beguiled by this, because the woman will say something like, if you really love me or you want to prove your love, you'd buy me this Birkin bag for my birthday, or you will take me to a 5-star restaurant. You're not proving your love at that point. You're proving how foolish and manipulative you can become based on this person's desires. Because what they've done, they have tried to quantify a way of you proving your love. See, this is something that you should be doing from yourself, not involving external factors. You know, it cracks me up sometimes. I'll hear people say, oh, the funeral was wonderful. It was great. I mean, it was really beautiful. No, the pageantry was beautiful. The death was horrible. And sometimes we fuse the two because we're proving ourselves at that point, our love for our loved one. We spend $75,000 and up sometimes for funerals. And it's actually made for the benefit of everybody else. Oh yeah, they really love their parents. They put them away pretty nicely. Well, no, they really loved the funeral home because they were the one that made the money off of them with the pageantry. But we don't look at it that way because we get emotional. And this is where a lot of you will allow your emotions to lead you down a trail that is not so pleasant. It's rather juvenile to say, prove your love. But people will hit you on that level. And a lot of people, they don't think it's an insult. They think it's a challenge. I got to prove myself to this person. Well, the way you start proving yourself to a person is when you start dating them. When you start showing them your character, your integrity, how dependable and reliable you are, how truthful you are, how honest you are. None of those things require money. It just requires you and your behavior. But for some people, that's not enough. No, they want the control and the power. And as I've told you, the hardest thing you will ever face in your life is trying to stay control of it. Because there are so many forces out there trying to influence you one way or the other. My way is the best way. His way is horrible. So what you wind up with a lot of time is confusion, especially when you listen to too many people and you're trying to appease every opinion that was given to you. And you wind up not knowing what to do. Now, who do we listen to usually? The person that we respect the most. And just because we respect them the most though means that they have our best interests at heart. There's some people that try to go biblical and say, well, you know, you're supposed to cling to your wife or you're supposed to do this. But if what they're presenting to you is wrong, you're only participating in an effort to your own detriment. So you have to be objective. You can't just be blinded by love and by your allegiance and obligation. You look at the people that are still talking about how the election was rigged long after this man didn't care about a damn soul that got locked up, didn't care about the country itself at the time. He was only concerned about one thing, his power and influence to have a bunch of fools to go out there and try to take over the Capitol building. Manipulation is one of the things that you really have to watch yourself on. Now, also we have to realize that when a person has gotten to the point where you're now jumping through hoops in order to appease them and please them at their will, they may not acknowledge any of your request. You tell them to prove their love to you, and they tell you something to the effect of, well, I proved my love to you, I'm still with you, aren't I? So, as you can see, it's an uneven playing field. This person values themselves far more than they value you. That's the reason why they put you in that predicament. Where else do we see this? We see this when a woman, for instance, may not really like a guy, for instance, but she doesn't want to hurt his feelings per se. But she's trying to make him go out and make that extra effort for her so that she could feel as though he'll be palatable enough for her to kind of settle for him. Prove to me that you love me. If you're going to prove to me that you love me, you would abide by my standards. I told you I only date a man that makes $70,000 a year, $80,000, $100,000. And unfortunately, foolish men go out and try to do that. Some of the young girls in the urban areas. If you love me, to prove your love, I want you to get 3 bodies. In other words, she wants this fool to go out and kill 3 people to prove his love. While she sits back and says, I got this fool to go out and kill 3 people for me. Girl, I got him in my beck and call. I got an assassin. I got somebody that will go out and do anything I want him to do. And unfortunately, a lot of young men fall into that trap, get locked up, and by the time they get out, this woman's with somebody else, had kids, and now she's ready to be left alone because she and her family are trying to have a decent life. And she looks at you as that underling, that person that has allowed yourself to be manipulated and to ruin your reputation, life, and career. These are things you have to watch for. Other things, some guys, they may be with a woman that they're not really into that much, and they might persuade them, want to prove your love to me? Sleep with my roommate. And unfortunately, there are some women with such low self-esteem, they will do that just to prove themselves, prove their loyalty, prove their allegiance. See, what you have to remember is this is something that should be respected from you by you being with that person. They should respect you, so you shouldn't have to prove anything. Because apparently, if you didn't measure up, you wouldn't be with them. But some people just don't feel as though they've quite made it. You know, it's like this former professional football player used to say. He would say when he would come to practice, he was running a 4.3. And the coach took him to the side, defensive line coach took him to the side, and he said, man, you're busting your ass out there. You're really doing everything. You're going this, that, and a third over. And he's like, yeah. He said, now what I want you to do is to understand you've already made the team. You don't need to expend yourself like that during practice. He says, you're no use to us if you get hurt in practice and we got to put you on the IR, on the injured reserve list. He says, now, what's hurting you? He said, well, my hamstrings are hurting. My so-and-so is hurting. He says, this is what I want you to do. I want you to put a wrap on your leg and sit your ass on the bench for the rest of the practice. He's like, but coach, you know, he said, no. He said, you're more valuable during game day than you would be hurt here in practice. He says, you've made the team. You need to start slowing down a bit and adjusting to the pace of the team. And this is what you have to do in relationships sometimes, because you're overdoing it. You're doing too much. You're going out there and you're overextending yourselves for no reason. We'll talk more in a moment. The one thing to remember when it comes down to this particular term, proving your love, a lot of people who are underleveraged will use this to their advantage. Let's take, for instance, a guy gets out of prison. As one person I knew told me, the first thing he would look for, he would take the money that he got, the $250 he got from prison, he'd rent a hotel room for one night. He'd go out, buy him some cologne, go to Ross, get him some clothes, and he'd go to a nightclub. And his sole purpose of going to that nightclub that night is to find a woman who had a good job, who was maybe a little bit overweight and had low self-esteem, and would be happy to have some guy show her attention. Now, he's starting out from ground zero with nothing. And what he would do is go out, meet a woman, flatter her, and then lay out the truth about his life for that empathy. And of course, she'd feel sorry for him, especially if he only had one night that he could pay for in the hotel, even though he still had money left over. And she would tell him, hey, you can come stay with me until you get on your feet. Now, with that, he feels as though he has something. Now, what he had to do was to figure out a way of getting more support and buying more time. So one of the things he would start doing is working on his self-esteem. He would start building it up. Oh, she's happy with him. She's got a man in the house. She's making pretty good money. She may not be so attractive, but he's positioning himself so that eventually, just like he built her up, he could tear her down gradually. But he's not doing it out of malice. What he's doing it out of is so that he will have a steady stake in the relationship. And so he starts building her head up about hey, you know, we're going to have a family, we're going to be together, et cetera, et cetera. And so he's going to be dutiful and do everything she needs to have done. He's going to be very conscious of showing gratitude to her. But what he's also going to do is he's going to eventually start asking her to prove herself. I was never loved, and I don't know how to be loved, etc., etc. And she's going to shower him with gifts, get him a wardrobe of clothing, give him cologne, whatever he needs, whatever he wants, because he is now her crown jewel. He's helping her self-esteem immensely. And even though she may not be the woman he would want, she's the woman he could get. And so by putting that carrot out there for her to prove herself incrementally, he's gradually building momentum, getting himself back. He gets a job. She co-signs on a car with him. And they are like a couple. And what he's done, he's fed off of her success. But there's a sense of envy there because he wants to be successful too. He wants to be the man. He wants to assert himself once again. And so he goes out, he gets a job. Maybe the job doesn't pay that much, but it has a prestigious title. He may work for any kind of company just to get the title. So she's not embarrassed when she introduces him to other people. Oh, he's handsome. And he gets in the right circles where those women start asking, what the hell is he doing with her? He could do so much better. Now, upon hearing this, he realizes he has other options. And he's going to gradually flex those options going along. Because he knows that this woman that he's with is, one, insecure, two, willing to keep him at almost any cost, and three, willing to listen to him in order to keep him in her presence, which means that she's going to lower her standards, lower her boundaries, and question her values. Now, folks, what I've told you is something that has happened and still continues to happen. This is how a lot of guys wind up. You know those narcissists, those guys, ladies that you can't stand? Many of them start out this way. And he gets to a point where he can now leverage going to another woman to get the most performance out of the woman he's with, where she's willing to do anything to keep him. Because she hasn't had that kind of attention before. So these people know who to look for and who to stay away from. Because they know that this is not going to work on everyone. There are women, by the way, that do this as well. More women than men do this. Where they get a little equity in the relationship, and they leverage it. The one thing to keep in mind, proving yourself in a relationship is also a way of demoting you in it. Even though you've been together for 10, 15 years, that partner comes up and says that, the one thing they want to do is to give you the impression that things will get better if you jumped higher, if you tried harder. But they have no intention for you ever to reach that goal. They just put it out there in order to keep you going. Now, what usually happens, people get tired of this. But at that point, this person has built themselves up enough and they have more options where they can go and find someone else and run that same game on them. So the game is old. You figured them out. And you've broken up with them. that person's just going to go on and find someone else to do the same thing to. Until they get to a point where they can sufficiently sustain themselves. And then they'll always find someone who's an underling who will be willing to be their stepping stone for an extended period of time. But it's a gradual thing. And the one thing that these people don't have to do usually is be accountable to the partner they're with. What they want to do is present an image above reproach, where that person's concerns are set at ease. And meanwhile, this person is diligently trying to get to a position of equity in the relationship where they can implement that practice of manipulation. Now, what does that question do? I need for you to prove yourself to me. Could you prove yourself to me? Could you prove your love? It's to foster doubt in that individual, where they become self-critical and damn near apologetic in some instances, because if the person acts very sensitive about the infraction they perceive, it works to their advantage. Women do this all the time. You should have known better. You should have known. You should have. Even when they didn't say it. And the poor guy is out there trying to shuffle and make everything work. Well, I didn't know. There's no excuse. You should have asked me. You should have talked to me. You should have. And it's like, I tried talking to you. I tried asking, but you never said anything. And so that's an indirect way of manipulating you to prove yourself. Another way they get you, fellas, is this. You move a woman in with you. She doesn't have a car. You're picking her up and dropping her off every day. You know, if a man really loved his woman, she'd figure out a way for her to have a car. So what she does, she challenges your masculinity. She challenges your leadership. She challenges your choices and decisions. But she's not doing it on a fair basis by no street. What she's doing is, she's doing this because what she wants to do is to see if she could falter some kind of doubt or guilt on your part. And therefore, you become compliant. This is the reason why people don't like relationships, because they have to contend with things like this when they meet people they don't know, and they have to get to know them. And sometimes they will spend months before they realize what they're dealing with. In some other cases, years. It totally depends. We see other manipulative tactics. The woman that wants to give her husband a blowjob if he would go and, for instance, fix the cabinets in the kitchen. And we think it's cute. Honey, I'm going to give you a BJ if you go and fix the cabinets in the kitchen. Okay, the incentive, right? But I want you to think about it. If that wasn't a special occasion for him to fix the cabinets, would he still get that same invitation? Probably not. Low-hanging incentives. Something that she could have done voluntarily. Because, see, some women actually use sex as a gift. I had a woman one time, it was my birthday, and I really didn't want to go out on my birthday with her, because we had just started up a week prior. And she was like, oh no, it's your birthday. We're going to go out. We're going to celebrate. So basically what happened, we went out on a date for my birthday. Now, when I celebrated alone on my birthday, guess what I had to do? pay for my own dinner, pay for my own cake, pay for my own everything. Well, it was no different. The only difference was I had to pay for our everything. And she didn't, you know, buy a card or anything. I wasn't really requesting that of her because I just met her. And she says, well, looks like I have to give you a birthday gift. And I'm like, what's that? She says, well, you're going to come over to my apartment and find out. So I'm thinking I'm going to get a gift. Not that it really meant anything, because I told her not to get me anything because we just started to know each other. Well, her gift was me sitting on the sofa, her coming back in the living room naked to give me sex. That was her birthday gift. The interesting thing was, after we had sex, I didn't hear from her for about 3 days. She calls me up and she says, well, how you doing? I said, I'm doing fine, how are you? She says, well, I knew I overstepped my boundaries the other night, so I don't think we would do well in a relationship. Now I'm confused and I'm like, what are you talking about? She says, well, I usually don't sleep with men on the first date. And I'm like, well, that's a lie because you slept with me on the first date. And she says, yeah, I know. And she hung up. And I said to myself, now, I wonder if she does this with every guy who has a birthday. Pussy is supposed to be a gift. Now, imagine men giving dick as a birthday gift. He lives to look at a guy like he's crazy. But that's what you contend with. So, learning lesson for me at that point, pussy is not a gift. So I wrote that off my list. But some guys will accept that because, hey, they're happy to get it. But the thing was, it was disingenuous for one thing. She did that basically because I paid for everything. And that was her thank you. And what that also meant was, apparently, she just had a need that needed to be met. So it wasn't about sincerity, it wasn't about anything as far as structuring a relationship. It was all about the opportunity. So in retrospect, I looked at it from the standpoint, I paid for dinner, the cake, the birthday party, and all this stuff. And the way she showed me gratitude was give me some pussy, something she already needed for herself to get some dick. So really there was no real benefit outside of the few minutes we were together. So therefore, I said, okay, I got it. Ladies, this is the reason why some men don't take you seriously. It's because of women like the one I was with that night. And that's the reason why some of you will see men go straight for sex. It's because women like that. And this is what causes the confusion a lot of times between men and women. More in a moment. It should also be noted that some men and women are actually put in a position of proving their love to be used by their partner, by other people, like lend-lease. I'll never forget a friend of mine one time was starting to date this lady, and her mother's house was like in pretty bad shape. The cabinets had fallen off, the hinges and doors need to be shored up. And he had started dating this lady, And she was very stingy with the sex, from what he was telling me. He said they barely had any intimacy, any time together. She was always on the phone with her girlfriends and family members, going on with her life, even though she was in a relationship with them, supposedly. And what she would do is just give him some sex in order to placate him, but her non-sexual attention was spent with her friends and family. Some of the very attention he desired from her that he couldn't get. And he was working a lot of overtime during that time. And one day in particular, she told him, "We need to go over to my mother's house this weekend because she needs a lot of repairs done." And he was like, "Well, you know, I'm working overtime this weekend." She says, "Well, if you love me, you could forego a weekend of overtime for me." Well, he goes over there with his power tools and he fixes everything at the mother's house. And she drives him back over to her place so he could pick up his car. And she says, "Yeah, well, I'm going out with my girlfriends tonight, so maybe we can talk later." Then he started, you know, "Hey, why are you spending so much time with them, et cetera, et cetera?" And she's like, "Well, they're my friends, and I'm going to always hang out with them. When they want to hang out, I'm hanging out with them. And this is something you got to accept in the relationship." So he called me up that night, "Hey, man, let's go have a drink." And then we were discussing what was going on. And he asked me what my opinion of it was. And I said, "What she did, she used you. She wants you to constantly prove yourself. And every time you do so, she's using you." I said, "Now think about it for a moment. She actually farmed you out to do work at her mother's home. Now you did it out of kindness of your heart. But now she's going to start asking you to do other things for other people because she's got it like that." And he's like, "Oh no, I ain't doing anything else, man. I'm done with that." Well, he thought he was. He wound up putting an alternator and fan belt on her girlfriend's car based on her having him prove himself, prove that he was a good mechanic, prove, and she built and buttered him up. And he's like, "Man, you're right, she is using me." I said, "That's what I'm getting at. Because she's more committed to her friends and family than you. You're just a tool to make her look good. Because through it all, who's benefiting? The people she's allowing to use you." And he was like, "Well, how can I stop this?" I said, "You stop this by saying it's going to cost. Your time is valuable." Soon as he started doing that, the relationship waned, and then poof. She didn't call him anymore, didn't have any use for him. And he started to realize that. That's the way you stop that kind of manipulation. Put a price tag on it. You'd be surprised how many people will not respect you when they have to actually pay you. I dated a lady one time that was a seamstress and designer. And she was going to make this jacket for me because she had this extra material. And I told her, I said, "Well, you know, you don't have to make anything for me." She said, "No, I'm going to make it for you." And what she got mad at was after she made it, it was a nice jacket. I paid her. And she was so mad at me, it was pathetic. She said, "I can't believe." I said, "Well, here's the thing. You use your time. This is what you do for a living. So I have to respect that. If I don't respect you as my woman doing this, how will other people respect you?" And she thought about it and she was like, "Well, yeah, I've done so much stuff for free with other people." I said, "That's been the problem. This is the reason why your business is not growing, because they don't respect what you do. Because see, sometimes when you start up and you're doing things, you're going to have your friends to come in and they're going to want to have their benefit. And of course, when you change things up, they get pissed off because they can't benefit from you like they used to. And they get upset about that. But she started to realize that when she started doing that, the people that were actually paying her, that were her so-called friends, those numbers dwindled. They started thinning out. And she realized she only had about 3 friends out of that whole plethora of people that used to always hang around and call her and get in touch with her. And she started to see that she had a self-worth, even though she was charging clients. But when she started to realize, hey, you know what? They need to respect me. And I wore the hell out of that jacket. It was a nice satin jacket. I wore that thing for years. Now, the other thing too, some people will use you under the pretense of you being the savior. They build you up like you're this messiah. They stroke your ego. And you're out there trying to do the best job possible in order to impress them. And they give you an attaboy, they're patting you on the back. And then they start bragging about you to friends and family. And of course, every time you do something for them, they're giving you compliments and giving you referrals. Now, outside of the circle of people that can use you for free, everyone else that they refer you to, they're going to tell them, oh, there's a charge. And that's how they keep the goodies to themselves. And you have to learn to control this. Because if you don't, it can definitely get out of hand. And one thing I would always tell you, as men, before you go in and doing any kind of work for anyone, you know, your girlfriend or family members or friends, girlfriends or whatever, try to give them the option of going to someone that they will pay, a professional for it, before you lay a hand on anything. Because just like you're praised to fix something, you may be damned if things go wrong. I just want to tell you that. For a short period of time, I worked at an automotive service company. And we had a person that came in, and she had a problem with her starter. Well, they did a diagnostic on the car. She had a bad starter, bad alternator, bad battery, bad relay switches. She had never replaced anything on the vehicle. And she was adamant, I just want the starter replaced only. We kept telling her, you need to replace all these other things. Nope, nope, nope. Well, she goes, starts the car up, takes off. All right. She paid like $350 for the starter and installation. Here comes a flatbed truck with her car on it. She's in the passenger seat. She jumps out. She is smoking hot. She's mad. I don't know what's wrong with the car. The car cut off on the freeway. And you guys are responsible for it. It's something you guys did with the starter, et cetera, et cetera. Showed her the paperwork, and I said, ma'am, you need a battery and an alternator. And you also needed the other components. Yeah, well, you guys should have known this, and you should have replaced it. Well, we can't replace it without your authorization and signature. And the first thing out of my mind, I'm going to sue. We're like, okay, well, if you want your car fixed, ma'am, you let us fix everything that's wrong with it. Well, you said the alternator was bad. I said, in the battery. Well, I can get by without the battery. Went on and fixed the alternator. Car started up. She drove it off. Here comes back on the flatbed again. There's something wrong. You guys are doing something wrong in my car, et cetera, et cetera. You guys are trying to rip me off, et cetera. Going on and on. And then we said, well, ma'am, this time it's the battery. All right, let me go ahead and replace the damn battery. I said, well, why don't we replace the relay switches as well? No, there ain't nothing wrong with the relay switches. They're working. It's just the battery. You said it was the battery. I said it was the battery, relay switches, starter, and alternator. Y'all just trying to rip me off. You realize how much money I paid in towing to get the car back over here, et cetera, et cetera. She's going on and on. Replace the battery. A couple of days later, she comes walking in. My car won't start, and you guys are responsible for towing it over here, because ain't no way in the hell that car, all the money I spent on that car, that I should be walking to come over here. Well, she got the car on the flatbed again, brought it back over. It was the relay switches. Replaced those. Afterwards, never heard from her again. But what it came down to, had we done everything consolidated at one time, it would have been less than $1,000. Being that she incrementally did it, she spent well over $2,000. You have people who are like this. And what I'm telling you, gentlemen especially, if you're going to do handyman work and shit like that at somebody's house, and you don't have a business, and you don't have insurance to cover you, be very careful. Refer them to a professional. Don't go in there taking on that task to try to prove yourself. Because I'm telling you, it's going to hurt you more than it'll help you. I had a computer repair business years ago, and customers used to have me to come over, and I was doing in-home service where I come over to their houses and fix systems. And there was this one lady. I came over to her house, and she was having a problem with Windows. What would happen, it would always go to the boot menu. Well, a master boot record had been deleted. So I created another MBR, and it worked. And she was like, oh, great. How did you have that working? And then she started telling me other things that were wrong with it. And the reason why she was having such a problem was because she didn't have any space on the hard drive. And I told her, you'll need another hard drive. And then we can dump that information onto the larger hard drive, and that will help you for a while. And I was going to petition it. So I went on and did that. And things were working pretty well. Well, her friend that she referred to came to my shop with her beat-up-ass computer. Now, I knew something was wrong, first of all. She says, well, you know, the fan doesn't work on the power supply. Okay, we're going to need a new power supply. Well, no, just replace the fan. Nope, not going to take that chance. It's cheaper just to buy the power supply. Went back and forth on that. I went on and bought a new power supply, but when I opened the chassis of that computer up, I had to take it out back and I had to spray it with an air hose. And there was a cloud of dust. I could barely see myself. And I had to go through that first. And there was a little nest in there and looked like mice had lived in that thing, because she had the panels open in the back for the slots for the IDE and PCI cards and the AGP card. So I went on and took a look at the hard drive. I mean, took a look at the motherboard, took a look at the processor, and she had a daughter board on there. For those of you who don't know, a daughter board is another board that sits in a slot on the motherboard. It helps with the processing power. There's another processor on it. And the problem that she was having was that some of the applications she was running on it, it really was not set for that. She was running Windows 95 on this thing. And we, at this time, we were up to XP, Vista, and Windows 2000. And so I explained to her, I said, well, you come out better upgrading than you would by trying to make this thing work. I said, I could probably get Windows 2000 on it. I said, that's really pushing it. And she's like, well, no, I'm not getting a new computer. You just got to fix what you have. So I go on, put Windows 2000 on it, get it up and working, got everything going. She takes it home, and she comes back the next day. My computer's really slow. Why is that? I said, well, problem you have, you only have 64 gigs of memory on that thing. I said, you're gonna need at least 128 minimum to really run the programs you have on it. You're trying to rip me off. Just go and get the memory. I said, well, the only problem is the board can only support 128. If you were going to do this, I'd recommend that you get another board, which would be cheaper, because I could get her a board for $90. And for me to get the RAM, it would have been much cheaper, and she would have had at least a half gig RAM in there. No, I want you just to go put the 128 in. Put it in, comes back. I need a new computer. I want an e-machine. I don't sell e-machines. Well, what's your cheapest computer? Cheapest one I had that was built from the ground up by me was $650 without the monitor. That's too expensive. Well, can't help you on that. You probably have to go somewhere else to find it cheaper. You sure you can't give it to me cheaper? Nope. She said, I'll give you my phone number. You can come over and have dinner. I said, nope. So she walks out. She's frustrated. Now the person that referred her to me came back. And she's like, well, what did you tell my friend? I said, I told her that if she wanted a new system, she's going to have to pay $600 for the lowest system. She says, really? I said, yeah. She said, well, she was going to give you some pussy if you would have marked it down to less than 600. She said, how about 400? I was stunned. This woman actually thought that that was going to work with me. But this is something that she was accustomed to doing in other avenues of her life. And I wasn't quite sure she meant what she said. She said, yeah, she'll sleep with you if you give it to her for $300. I said, oh, no, that's not going to happen. You'll run across people like this. And I never thought in a million years I would ever hear something like that from a person, especially a customer. But here's the problem. You know, when we talk about morals, boundaries, and values, there's some people who don't have them, or they have them so broad that it's not offensive by what they suggest. People come in every form, shape, and size. And what really stuns us, like it did me that day, I didn't believe people were like that. Now, this woman came back about a month later to show off. Well, I went on and got me a Dell laptop. I said, that's fine. And of course, she showed it off to me and everything. She had that Inspiron, and took a look at it. And I saw it only had 128 megs. And she had the lower end of the Dell line. And she was happy with it. Until she had problems a couple of months later. And what she had tried to do was put Linux on it, but when she did, it messed up her partitions. And I just told her, you need to take it to Dell. It's still under warranty, take it to Dell. Now I want you to pay, don't take it to Dell. You sure? Yep, take it to Dell. And then she tells me, you know, my girlfriend told you what I was willing to do, and I wouldn't be faced with this problem. Again, shifted blame. People want you to prove themselves to them. especially when it comes down to them trying to benefit from you. And you have to ignore it, and you have to keep your standards. People do this in relationships regularly. And after a while, it gets tiring, it gets frustrating, it gets boring. Again, this is one of the very reasons why people hate getting involved in relationships. We'll talk more in a moment. Now, in conclusion, we're going to talk about one other aspect of this mindset. Them playing the role of the victim, where in some way they feel or perceive you've done them wrong. So therefore, you have to make good with them. Now, just like that person that you may have cheated on has the power to make you jump through hoops, sometimes that person who cheated will try to reverse the roles on you and make you do the same thing, make you feel guilty and foster self-doubt. Well, you know, if you were more intimate with me, I wouldn't have had to go out of the marriage or relationship. It's your fault that it happened. You ought to be ashamed of yourself not being able to keep your man. After all, I cheated because you didn't do your job. If you were a better woman, I wouldn't have had to go and have that other woman to do your job. Now, you see how that blame, shame, and guilt was projected onto the person? A lot of people will use that. And if they find any cracks in the armor on the other party, a sign of weakness, they know then the only thing they have to do is to keep doing it. And then get it to the point where, if you trust me, you prove your trust by letting me go with my friends this weekend, and I'll be back, and I'm not going to mess with anyone. Okay, honey, I trust you. I believe you. Even though that person has cheated on them. But they're leveraging the fact that they're so afraid of being alone and being by themselves that they're willing to actually comply to that. These are the women who will say, well, whatever he does out in the street, as long as he doesn't bring it home. Because what has happened, that person has leveraged themselves in a position where they have that absolute power to do that. They throw up their hands. I will never forget, there was this lady I was chatting with, and we were thinking about going out on a date, and she blew it. We were chatting at first, and she was telling me about her past relationship. And she says, well, my ex-boyfriend cheated on me with a hotter girl than I am. And she says, I'm not going to ask much of you when it comes down to that department. I just want you to have sex with me at least twice a month. And whatever you do, if you're with another woman or whatever, I don't need to know about it and don't care. If we get together, please don't talk about her around me. I don't want to hear anything about her. But I don't want you just sleeping with me. I want you sleeping with other women. So in that way, you won't leave me. Just in that texting conversation that we had, I said, I don't think we should be together. And the reason being, I don't like using people. And she was volunteering for that because she was accustomed to being treated that way in past relationships. Now, a lot of guys would have taken advantage of that, without a doubt. But see, I have never been in that person that needed to always prove myself or prove my manhood or masculinity. And that's the difference. But a lot of guys will say, well, hell, she offering the ass, let me go ahead and hit it. But one thing you'll realize, gentlemen, all pussy is not good pussy. And ladies, that holds true for you too. just like you think all dick is not good dick. Some of you women actually lay up with guys, and while the guy is pounding away on you, you're thinking to yourself, this relationship's not gonna last. Can't wait till he finished so I can go on and end this shit. Or you'll think something to the effect, the only reason why he's with me is because I'm giving him sex. And see, the thing you have to come to grips with is, if you allow yourself to be put in those situations, it's too late to be self-critical of your actions. Because you've already been through that experience before, but did you learn from that past experience? Or is it something that you're thinking that things are going to get better? Or is it the mindset that, well, I'm used to it, I know what's going to happen, I'm just going to go on through with it? See, the one thing that you have to worry about is when you get addicted to failure, setbacks, disappointments, when that becomes the norm, that's when you start lowering your boundaries and your standards. And you're starting to allow somebody to face punch you emotionally. And you don't have to be that way. But sometimes we allow ourselves to get to that point. This is the reason why I tell you, whenever you're facing a situation when you've been dating people and you're starting to see the same old, you have to diversify. Switch it up. Maybe don't even date the same kind of person in your area. Maybe don't date the same person in your race. Maybe don't date the same person in your own religion. Something that's different, that will give you a different perspective on people, so that you don't form those opinions and become very generically swamped in this one belief. Because it works to your disadvantage. And you learn that. I had to. I was trying to give everybody an equal opportunity and started dating women that I shouldn't have been dating. And then I started thinking about it. I had a gun pull on me. I've had all kind of situations where the woman was threatening to hurt herself if I left her. And I started looking. I said, wait a minute. Hold up. Let me get back to my standards, values, and boundaries. Because what I was doing, I was falling into that lull of just accepting whatever was there. It's like even now in Vegas, the majority of women I meet are married, and they get upset when I remind them of that and say, hey, you know what? We don't need to have a relationship. And they don't look at it that way. But if I were to go and lower my standards, hell, I'd be sleeping with married women all the time. But I don't, because I know better. Because I know what it's like to be cheated on by a partner. It's not a good feeling. Especially when you find out about it. Oh boy, it's bad. And so, in that respect, when you start having that, you have started having more self-respect for yourself. See, your self-respect will leave you when your standards and values leave. And then you have to question your own integrity. And then you look how far you've fallen from where you were. And that's a tough thing. And sometimes some of you have fallen so far you can't even lift your neck up to see where you fell from. I tell you, one of the toughest things I had to deal with divorcees, a lot of them would come out of the marriages and they would have lost their identity. They had tried so hard to keep the marriage going. And when I would meet them, they would be in this bastardized state, emotionally unstable, untrusting of anyone, having trust issues like you wouldn't believe. Thinking that everybody's out to get them. Still fighting that battle of that past marriage. Making a comparison between you and their ex-husband. They've been traumatized, and they haven't taken time to really sit back and heal. They're too busy trying to go forward, trying to put a Band-Aid over a gaping wound, believing that that's all they have to do and everything will be fine. No, it won't be fine. It's something they have to address. And a lot of times they don't want to do that because they don't want to face the music. They don't want to be accountable. They don't want to be responsible. Not to anyone else, to themselves. And so they would rather deal with that and then isolate themselves from the rest of the world. Nobody wants me. And they started to take on the same mindset that their ex had about them. And what did they do? In order for you to be the new guy coming in, guess what you have to do? They want you to prove yourself, prove that you're not like my ex-husband. Instead of looking at some of the characteristics and knowing that this guy is not like your ex-husband. But you already have those milestones from where you've been hurt, and you want him to prove that he doesn't meet those milestones like your ex did. A lot of people waste time in relationships trying to prove themselves to someone. And that's the reason why I'm totally against it. Because the time you're wasting trying to prove and convince this person, you could be with someone else that's willing to open the book with you and learn and see whether or not you guys are compatible and give you credit for your own merit as to who you are. See, this is the problem with people who are trying to prove others. They don't give you any merit for being yourself. They only reward you for being what they want you to be. And this is where a lot of people fall short in relationships. Some of them want you to over-customize yourself for them. They want you to go get a tattoo of their name on you. Folks, don't do no dumb shit like that. Seriously. I was with a woman one time, and she had a heart with the name Chuck between her titties. And every time I was hitting it, I'd look down there and see Chuck, and I'm like, damn. And she was talking about, oh, I'm gonna get it removed. She wasn't gonna get it removed. And that meant that Chuck can always come back and take pride in looking at her in missionary position with those titties spread and his name right there on her chest. Pride and ownership. So these things vary. And it's crazy. But these are some of the things you will contend with as you meet people. It's just to give you a heads up. Some of you already know this. Others of you are now discovering it. Some of you will experience it in the future and you'll be prepared. Because everybody's life experience is different. Everybody's dating experience is different. It's only obvious, right? But sometimes what we want to do is to normalize it into one configuration and that every dating experience has to go one way. No, it doesn't. And for some people, they can't handle that. It's a nuance for them. Now, in closing, what I want you to get out of this episode, if nothing else, if your partner tells you you have to prove yourself to them, and you've been dating them for a while, this means that you have to reevaluate to make sure nothing's been out of line with you. And you have to look at what has changed in them. And then making a decision whether or not they're worth the effort. But you shouldn't have to prove yourself if you've been with them that long. In the beginning of a relationship, if a person tells you, you have to prove yourself through monetary means by taking them out to 3-star restaurants and all the 5-star restaurants and all that crap, you don't need to venture that high. You don't need to do that. Because see, what you have to remember, the reward that you will get from that person, it's only valuable to that person. You can't transfer that and take that to someone else, can you? Don't be a fool for love. And definitely don't be a fool for another person. You have too much of a life to live to waste it on somebody that is literally not considering your feelings or your time. Take care, folks.
We at Romantic Truth appreciate your listenership.
Listeners, you're invited to stream and listen to Jorzan's music on Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, AudioMac, or Deezer. Type in Jausan in the search for artists to follow and like modern instrumental music from his discography.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those solely of the host and are not condoned or endorsed by Romantic Truth, Anchor, or any of its affiliates.
The advice given herein is the expressed opinion of the host and not to be used for legal, marital, or family, counseling, or for professional practice purposes. In the event for professional assistance, please contact the local licensed professional family counselor, marriage counselor, or social services professional in your region.
If you need someone to talk to in regards to help, you may contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. Available 24 hours. All correspondences read on the show have been pre-screened and pre-approved by the submitter to be aired on the show.
Be advised that all of the background music of production not provided by Anchor is owned by James Adams and Jorzan One Music, exclusively licensed for this Romantic Truth podcast under waiver.
Please understand that there were no people or animals hurt in the segments of this show, including plants. All sound effects were improvised in the studio setting with props. We are an equal opportunity employer with 2 Yorkie poodles and a rat terrier as the security detail.
Please be advised that the content of this podcast is under copyright by Romantic Truth and James Adams.